Hey, it's Tim here, and I've got a quick favour to ask you. If you've not yet reviewed the Creative Piano Teaching podcast on iTunes, can I point you in the right direction to do so? You see, reviews and ratings on iTunes are among the most important metrics for a podcast to rank well. And as you can probably appreciate, it takes a lot of work to produce this show each season, and it would mean the world to me personally if you would just take the 1 minute needed to leave a quick review, which you can do so by simply visiting timtopham.com/iTunes. Thank you so much for doing so, and on with this week's episode. This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by My Music Staff.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, your home for inspiration, ideas, business, and teaching strategies from some of the world's best teachers to help support your teaching and grow your studio. My name is Tim Topham, your host for the show, and whether this is your first or 151st time here, thank you so much for tuning in. It does mean a lot to me that you have decided to spend your time with me today. And how exciting is this? Back for another season, 2019. I'm very, very excited. We hit 150 episodes at the end of last year and had a bit of a celebration with a very special podcast bundle. Hopefully some of you have picked that up and have been enjoying going through the amazing resources we gave away with that. I'm really looking forward to our next 150 episodes, starting with my very special guest today. This is episode number 151, and a very special welcome as well to my Inner Circle Piano Teaching community members. So today we're kicking off a new season with a discussion about music theory. But hang on, don't turn off just yet. I know music theory might not seem the most exciting thing that we all have to do with our students, but I guarantee you today's guest will get you fired up. She's an amazing woman with some fantastic ideas about both the connection between theory and practice and how to bridge that with students, and also just generally about how to inspire students when it comes to helping them with their theory and indeed why we should be bothering about this at all. Today's show notes and full transcript are now available at timtopham.com/episode-151. Now, you know how I love giving away freebies on podcasts, and today is no exception. We have a fantastic ebook that's been created by today's guest just for podcast listeners today. We've got links to one of her online courses, but also her ebook about three effective ways to teach students in their own learning style. And my guest today, as you'll find out, has done a lot of research into learning styles, and we talk about that a little bit in the show. So this goes into much more depth about some of those learning styles, and you might have heard about them: auditory learners, visual learners, kinesthetic, etc. So if you've kind of wondered how that might be useful to you and how that actually works in a music education setting, then this is the download to get. So you can grab that from the show notes page at timtopham.com/episode-151. My guest today is the founder, CEO, and author of the Ultimate Music Theory series. She brings over 35 years of remarkably successful teaching experience to the development of the UMT series and courses. She is a registered music teacher, sought-after clinician, and a neuro-linguistic practitioner. And if you're not sure what that is, we'll talk about that too. She has served as president of the Manitoba Registered Music Teachers Association, Canadian Coordinator for the Music Link Foundation, and Manitoba Coordinator for Music for Young Children. Welcome to the show today, Glory St. Germain.
Great. Thank you, Tim. It's an honor to be here. I'm super excited. I'm a big fan of your podcast, so thanks for having me on.
An absolute pleasure. I'm a big fan of what you do for music theory people out there, trying to make it, definitely making it more fun, because that's one thing we're going to be talking about shortly. Tell me about your name. It is a little bit unusual with the saint in the middle of it. Well, at least for Australians.
Well, I was born on Christmas Day, and so my mother thought, well, it's got to be a Christmas name, so she named me Glory, as in, you know, glory to God, whatever. Yeah. I am a saint, ha ha ha, but married my wonderful husband, Ray, who's a professional entertainer, and so hence, Glory St. Germain.
So, and your husband's name is St. Germain. That's the surname? Yeah. That's really, it's quite unusual for us. Do you know where it comes from?
Actually from France. Yes. Oh. And when Ray and I traveled to France, and we actually found the big clock, and there it was, Saint Germain. And of course I was in heaven shopping, because all of the shops would have scarves and dresses and purses, and they all said Saint Germain, Saint Germain. Wow. And I was like, I need one of those and one of those and one of those.
Now, for those of you who are about to switch off because we're talking about scarves and shopping, don't worry. We are going to be talking about music today. And look, I think, given our topic is music theory, it might just be best to start with a bit of a definition. So can you just define music theory in your words, Glory?
Yeah, absolutely. Music theory, to me personally, is really the universal language of music. And I really feel that all musicians and vocalists, they have to understand music theory in order to sing and play and perform. And I think sometimes people say, well, you know, I play by ear, or, you know, even if you read music traditionally, and you say, oh, no, I don't study music theory. And I'm like, that's impossible. The fact is that all musicians have to have a basic knowledge of theory, or you couldn't play anything. So whether you play by ear, you read a book, you got to have music theory. It is the universal language. It's all of us.
And, you know, music theory, when people say music theory, often there's a bit of dread in the air. Kids will roll their eyes. I can remember some of my own music theory. So what actually got you into focusing on this? Because it's not like, you know, you've started rock bands or something like that. This is music theory we're talking about here. Can you take us back to what got you into this as a focus for your career?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, whoever thought music theory was fun, definitely not me. I just have to admit that. I didn't like doing music theory as a child. And the reason I focused on music theory was that as a young piano student, I didn't have a very good experience in learning music theory. And I found that the books were confusing. And in fact, my teacher, I don't think she was very confident. And I had to do theory exams. It was a co-requisite. I was doing piano. I really was passionate about becoming a piano teacher. And truthfully, I didn't have the confidence either to teach theory because of the experience I had. So there I was, 16 years old, and I thought, there's got to be a better way.
It's the best first way to start any kind of enterprise that may be useful to other people in the future. It's one of the reasons that I started doing my resources for teachers as well. So what were those lessons like as a child? Did your practical teacher teach you theory as well, or did you go to someone else?
Well, she did, actually. I started my piano lessons when I was 5. I grew up in a very musical family. In my house, it was kind of like brushing your teeth. You were playing an instrument and you did it twice a day. I was very blessed. My mother and father were both multi-instrumentalists. They played all different instruments. So violin, guitar, bass, all that. My father would hand me a chord chart and just say, you know, play it. And I had no idea what I was doing. But I think the true theory lesson and experience was really one that my teacher, you know, because of that, I didn't really love theory either. So I think we are really affected about how our teacher presents those concepts to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember my own theory lesson experience was part of my practical lessons. So I would have, let's say, 30 minutes practical, 15 minutes. We'd actually, we'd move away from the instrument. We'd go and sit at a table and learn the theory with no connection really to the practice. And I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later on because I think that's a really important thing. But books were, maybe they still are, really the way that teachers teach theory. And perhaps that's part of the problem, because these books tend to just be so dry, don't they?
Yeah. They do. And actually, my true theory lesson experience, you know, so I didn't know too much teaching, you know, when I was 16. And in fact, I sent my students to other teachers because I didn't know what I was doing. But you talk about that dry experience. I saw that firsthand when my young daughter, Sherry, she was in the gifted youth program at the university, and she's actually now a music producer in Las Vegas. So all those lessons were worth it. Yeah. But when I sat at the back of her lesson, there was actually 15 kids in the class, and they all had their theory books, and they were all bored. The theory was boring. There was no laughing. There was no connecting it to the music. And in my mind, I just thought, there's got to be a better way. And I really wanted to not only serve my own students, but I thought, I need to make a difference. You know how sometimes you just think, I can help. And I wanted to help them understand because I was a musician. I mean, I wanted them to be able to improvise, compose, jam with the band, have that super fun experience of musicianship. And that's why we study music theory. So I thought, no, it's time to do something. Knowledge is power. So and certainly now as I look back, I'm so glad that I did.
Yeah, and we're all very glad that you did too. And we'll find out more about what you have created a little bit later on. So are you still teaching either instrumental or theory students privately?
Yes, I do. Of course, I'm running, you know, Ultimate Music Theory, so I'm only teaching 3 days a week, but I love teaching piano, and I certainly love teaching my Ultimate Music Theory club classes. And it's kind of funny because I kind of am back to my dad here, you know, like brushing your teeth, it's not an option. Mm-hmm. My students have to take practical. They come for 1 hour private, and they also come for 1 hour group theory club classes. But I think my theory classes are a little bit different than what you might think in tradition, because they are about, you know, applying all of those principles to the practical. So it's fun. You want to come? It's fun.
It sounds good. How many people in your theory groups?
Usually I have about 4 to 6 in my theory club classes, and it works out really well because I actually have other teachers that perhaps teach voice or band at school. And so they send me their students. So not all of them are necessarily playing the piano, but they are all musicians and for some of them vocalists, and they just need to learn how to read music. So it's kind of nice to collaborate. And then when we have our recitals, even though they're not piano students, they still get up and jam and perform with my students. So it works out really well.
And the light bulb that just went off in my head, which I wonder has gone off in some of our listeners' heads, is, this could be a new income stream or income source.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Not students. So, and that's one of the things that teachers can get from your training is an ability to teach music theory outside of your piano practice, right?
Yes, absolutely. There, as a matter of fact, there are many teachers that, and what you need in order to teach Ultimate Music Theory Club classes is basically a kitchen table and 6 chairs. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, you have to have an instrument there as well. But it is something that, you know, enabled me to, you know, be making for some teachers. I'll just use an example. They charge $50 per hour for teaching private piano. And now I'm making, you know, $250 to $400 an hour teaching group lessons. So it's a win-win because the students, you know, they don't quit. Like once they start with theory club classes, they're there for level 5, level 6, level 7. I start them right when they're little and all the way through. So they love it.
I even had an adult student once who loved the theory more than the practical. And she actually wanted to keep doing theory assessments and learning, and she stopped piano. It was the most bizarre thing. I must have been doing something right.
Yes.
So let's talk, we'll come back to that idea of business and income and things, because I actually think that is really important given how much I've been talking over the last few years about group teaching as an option for piano teachers. But I know some teachers don't really like the idea of having and purchasing 4 instruments or more, or however many, or they're just not comfortable about doing that. But perhaps having a small group of theory students could be an option for them and
provide
that extra income for the same amount of time. So let's talk about that a little bit later on. One thing I did want to talk about was this idea of writing music. And what I'm finding these days with notation software in particular, even our theory exams here in Australia have gone online. So students actually don't have to draw a treble clef. They drag one from the side and they have to place it in the right spot.
Yes.
Do you think it's still important for students to be able to use manuscript and a pencil and write music?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you actually retain 30 to 40% more when you write things down and engaged in the act of writing, as opposed to just listening or watching something. And music theory is a big aspect of being able to write music. So first of all, you need to understand the music and interpreting all of the markings. And you also, you know, think about it. I mean, if you and I were going to jam and write a song right now, and you would grab a piece of staff paper and notate a quick chord chart and hand it to me, or you might just write out a melody and say, you know, here, do this. So I have to be able to know the language. But And I certainly have made a big discovery when I was writing my theory books is that I had to learn finale, which is like a whole nother conversation. But if you don't know music theory, you can't use finale, because how are you going to put in your time signatures or your rest values or anything else? So I think that there's really a balance, but I have five children. All of them are professional musicians, including my husband and obviously myself. And when they're sitting down to jam, it's chord charts. Here you go. Here you go. And so they all need to know that language. And so, yeah, it doesn't matter if you're using, you know, GarageBand, you still have to comprehend that. Absolutely. And write it down.
Right. And for those listening who don't know what finale is.
Oh, finale. Okay. So finale is just a software program that enables you to create, I guess, a professional written score that you would then print off and either use, you know, for your students or basically any music book that you purchase, that music has been written into finale. So it's something, I'm sure there's other programs out there as well. It's just the one that I happen to use.
Right. Yeah. I think Sibelius is probably the most other common. Yes. Use one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've used that one as well. Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. I have to say I enjoy the art of students being able to draw notes and understand which side of the stem the note.
Yes.
All that kind of stuff. I do personally think it's important. And I hope it's not something that we lose when it comes to technology.
Absolutely.
But I did want to ask you what. Sorry, go on.
I just wanted to add one thing. You know, I mentioned my family and, you know, my children and you know, their role in composition and writing. And to this day, my husband, who plays guitar, professional entertainer, Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame and all of that, when he's writing a song, he goes to the piano with a manuscript and chord charts and writes it all out. And same with my daughter. So there is still the art of doing that. And of course, if you can't transcribe that, you know, then what are you going to do? So you got to still know how to write music.
Yeah. Anytime I've seen images of Hans Zimmer or John Williams or whatever at the piano doing their actual composing, they've always got a massive board, haven't they? A3 kind of manuscripts.
Yes.
And they're writing and scribbling. And I don't think that's changed since manuscripts started. So
absolutely
important. But I guess, and it's going to come back to how to make that enjoyable and fun and help students
see
the point of it. But of course, I also believe, and tell me what you think, that if a student can write music, they're going to be able to read it better.
Yeah. Oh, for sure they will. Absolutely. I agree. I mean, when my students are engaged and I do composing with them too, and they take great pride in doing that, you know, and the biggest thing, of course, is if they're in band and the band teacher, you know, makes a mistake, they proudly say, that's not the right way to write that. So,
very nice.
Little bonus points.
I was going to ask before whether technology has had any other impacts and maybe positive impacts on learning music theory.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Sometimes, and so I have two thoughts on that. One is that if you only think that you can, you know, push a button and learn music theory, then I kind of disagree with that. But I know that it has its place. And as I mentioned, you know, when you engage in all three modalities, you're going to learn faster. So we actually have developed the Ultimate Music Theory Flashcards app that correlates to the Ultimate Music Theory workbook. So there's over 7,000 flashcards and they also have audio. So they correlate to every single lesson in the prep, basic, intermediate, and advanced rudiments workbooks. And this reinforces brain science, which is seeing, learning, listening, writing, and remembering. So I think it's important. And also the kids can do it on their phone. So on their way to their, you know, piano lesson, they just put their buds in, do their ear training, and then, you know, we'll do a little test. I also have a lab, so I say, well, you know, you're 20 minutes early rather than just sitting there, you know, you may as well do your lesson. And I also use it as a 1 minute wrap up at the end of my lesson sometimes. Just say, hey, let's do you know, a 1 minute madness, see how many flashcards you know. So I think there's a benefit to both, but certainly not just, you know, let's not put blinders on and just go all technology, because I think we're missing, you know, really giving students an opportunity to become a well-rounded musician.
I agree that technology is an asset and it's a support to other things. It's part of a package that contributes to effective learning. And we should say too that Glory has, you've done some amazingly in-depth research about learning itself. Glory isn't just someone who's just jumped onto the scene. She's been working on this for years and years and years. Tell us just very quickly, just a couple of the main courses or research you've undertaken in learning theory.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm an NLP practitioner. So many years ago, I was so interested in neuro-linguistic programming. Neuro is how we think, linguistic is how we communicate, and programming is how you get the results that you get. And I wanted to make sure that I could implement that. And it was a massive course in order to become an NLP practitioner. I used all the techniques on my students and my husband to make sure that they were working. But I think it's really important to be coachable and to be open to continuous learning. So in NLP, I discovered learning styles, visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. I learned how to identify the learning styles of my students to become a more effective teacher because each student has their own learning style. And what's really interesting, Tim, is that when you are young, you have a predominant learning style. And then as you get a little bit older, you can, you know, have more than one. I am very much a visual learner. But when I first started my NLP training, I thought I was kinesthetic because I like to do things as everyone does. So I think it's important to really explore that with your students. Also, you know, I've done a lot of research in why do you learn more effectively when you're learning in a group setting? And this actually comes from the cooperative learning theory, which was developed in the early 1920s by social psychologists. And it's a proven fact that we actually develop in many different ways when we're learning in a group setting, which is why I see the great success in doing T-Club classes, because not only are they learning individually, they're supporting each other as a group. And that's what musicians do. Mm. So we're not just, I play the piano all by myself in my room. No, you're going to play duets, you're going to play with a band, you might learn another instrument. So I think that research has really served me well. And I share that in all of my teaching because, you know, what's the point of learning something if you don't share it with others?
I wholeheartedly agree with that. I think it's fascinating. I love reading about learning and the more we learn about the brain and how it works, the better we can serve our students. So thank you for sharing that. And it's great to see those threads of your own education coming through in the way that you present material too.
Yeah.
One of the things I did want to go back to is this idea of learning through practice. I know you feel similarly about this, but you know, one of the big focuses for me in the courses that I create for teachers is that by playing, let's say, chord progressions and learning about movement between harmony, students can learn a lot about the theory without really knowing that they're learning it. And one of the best examples I give is, I don't know about over in America and Canada, have you got theory exam systems?
Yes, we do.
And we'll talk more about that in a minute, but we've got exam systems here. And one of the things that they have to recognize and be able to write is four-part harmony cadences.
Yes.
And for when I learned how to do a cadence in four-part harmony, I was told the rules about this note rises to the tonic and that goes to there. And you learn it like a maths equation. You never do it at a piano. You just kind of write it out and you learn how to do it. I love, for example, when I teach my four chord composing, students can actually hear what it sounds like to go from 4-1 chord or the 5-1 chord or not. And actually experience that in practice. And then we can talk about, well, actually that's called a cadence and you hear that at the end of music and on we can go more deeper. So what's your approach with the training that you produce and the resources for your ultimate music theory teachers? Does it kind of say, okay, well, let's go to the piano and actually let's listen to how this works or how does the practical come into it?
Well, I'm glad that you asked that question because, you know, I remember I shared with you my father who would throw a chord chart at me and then just say play. And so initially I played the bass note and I think I just played like everything in root position when I started because I didn't really know anything. And then I started to understand harmony and the inversions and so on. And one of the things that I am really adamant about is that we have to learn how to see what we hear and hear what we see. so that when you're going to the piano, you should, and of course, this is a skill that's developed. I watched the video that you did with your student, which was brilliant, because you said, what's the distance, and understanding that chord. So I think it's really important. And one of the things that I do teach in the certification course too, is that when you're opening up the Ultimate Music Theory workbooks, not only are you going to open the book and just learn the theory, but you're going to take it up to the piano, do the analysis. It's kind of funny. I opened it up to this page, but anyway, I know you probably can't see it.
What is it?
Yes. So this one actually is called No More Pizza. There's a story behind that title. It's kind of funny. I opened it. I'll share it.
It's more or less a chord chart, is it?
Well, this is an analysis thing. So this was actually a No More Pizza. So there's a lot of analysis within the music theory question, but we're talking specifically, you know, about the chord structure. Mm. And I think in order to learn those progressions, you are right. You need to take it to the piano, see why it works. Oh, because that's just a semitone. And if you played it, you know, up a like it wouldn't sound right. So we need to develop the ear, and we need to, you know, look at the visual, like on the keys, understand it, but we also need to know how to read it. Because very often what I do with my students, it's kind of fun. And I'll open a book and I'll say, what do you think that sounds like? Can you sing it? Can you sing the melody? Mm. Because I remember I was in a music store once with my mom, and she said to me, I was looking through books, and I said, this is not a good book. I'm not going to buy this one. I'll look at another one. I said, oh, I can't wait to learn this one. She said, what are you talking about? And I said, well, I can hear it. I see the chord progressions. I can hear it in my head already. Mm. And she said, well, that's amazing. And I said, well, it's the same as you opening a recipe book and
I was just
reading
the ingredients.
My mother was an amazing, you know, cook, and she did all that I didn't. I was practicing, but she would read a recipe book and she could taste it. And I think we can develop that palette of colors for our students when we start them off with those basics, as you did with your young students, saying, well, here's a third. How do you make it minor? How do you make it one semitone? So I love it. I just love exploring all the colors. And I go, what if you add a seventh? Mm. Ooh,
minor seventh. I love my ninths.
Let's make it jazzy, my friend.
Now, a quick word from our sponsor, My Music Staff. Most of you have already heard about My Music Staff and how their software helps thousands of music teachers manage their businesses more efficiently. They handle all of your student management issues, scheduling, billing, and so much more. It's what I personally use in my own studio, and it's no surprise why it's the leading studio management software. What I think really makes My Music Staff stand out is its community-driven development and personal approach to customer support. It was such a pleasant surprise jumping into My Music Staff for the first time and realizing how in tune it was with my business and the ins and outs of a music studio. Since they partner with the music community to develop their software, they've been able to anticipate what teachers need and are constantly improving their software to exceed expectations. And a more recent example of responding to community feedback was the addition of a very popular feature, streaming video and audio files directly within the My Music Staff app. And that means that no longer do you have to download files to your device. So it makes it incredibly easy to share content with your students. My Music Staff is super easy to get up and running. The transition away from paper and spreadsheets is painless. If you do need help, the quality of support is second to none, and you'll always get a fully personalized response. I have yet to see the level of attention and care I receive from My Music Staff provided by any other software platforms I use, and I use a lot of software in my business. So what have you got to lose? Just go to mymusicstaff.com and sign up for their free 30-day trial today. I'm interested too. I've just picked up that you say semitone. So in Canada, are you minims and semitones and crotchets, or are you quarter notes and half steps? Are you like America?
I'm bilingual. Ah, ha, ha. Actually, one of the pages in our books, we actually did that whole analysis by introducing all of it. Because here's the great thing, Tim, and I know that you've traveled all over the world, including coming to America, and you've, you know, collaborated with other, you know, composers and authors. We're musicians. And we need to be able to speak that language easily. So whether you say half step or semitone, I think now with, you know, people doing so much traveling and collaborating, we need to know both of those. So we actually put them in the book. So if you're going through the Ultra Music Theory book, it's a universal language.
I think that's really good. I actually, to be honest, I think calling things quarter notes and eighth notes and sixteenths, like you guys do, is actually, it makes it much easier to understand what that note is than a crotchet and a minim and a quaver.
I agree with you. And I'll tell you, one of the things that we actually introduce, I'm glad that you mentioned that, is that when you take, and you know, we have whiteboards and things, and when you take a circle, like a pie, we'll call it a pie, I call it a rhythm pie. And so that's a whole note. And if you divide that rhythm pie of a whole note, and we'll say it's 4/4 time, because there's a whole note, you divide it in half, and now you see two half notes. And then you divide it in four, now you see four quarter notes. Or you can put two eighth notes in there, one quarter rest. So visually, when you're teaching, and in particular beginners or young students, then I have beginner adults, you're right, they can see it easily and understand and comprehend. There's, you know, four beats in the bar, and you know, I call a quarter note a ta, just because it's one syllable, one beat. So yeah.
Ta's, and do you use TTs? Ticker tickers.
I love TTs.
So you got that's Kadai as well in there too.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Oh, that's great. Well, look, I would love to hear some more of your top ways that teachers can make teaching music theory more engaging, relevant, and fun. Can you give us your top five or something like that?
Okay. I'm ready for this one, Tim.
All right. Let's do it.
Here's my top five. Okay. Write this down. Number one, foundation. I think teach the fundamental building blocks of music for sight reading and ear training. And a lot of fun is when you play You Be the Detective. I often have my students look through a piece of music and they are the detective, and then they have to teach me, because my philosophy is, if you can't explain it to me, you really don't know it. So if you truly want to learn, teach it. And so they love being the teacher. So that's number one.
So wait, so you'll say, okay, here's a piece of music. Tell me about the rhythm or something like that.
Yes. Yeah, right. Absolutely. And I would have you clap the rhythm and you teach me.
Right.
And so if you can't teach, and they love, I call them the musical detective games, because if you can't explain that. So for example, when you had your student, you did that. You just didn't call it the music detective, but you did ask him questions. And I find as a teacher, when we ask questions, our students learn much more than if we just talk the whole time and tell them things. So
absolutely. Yeah. But you're taking that a step further, in fact, and this is something we can use in all of our lessons, regardless of our instrument, which is, rather than just have you tell me back the answer to my question, teach me back. Yeah. And I really like that approach, because I know, I agree that when you teach something, you really do know it.
I think that's
a great step. So rather than tell me about the rhythm in this piece and can you see any patterns and things, let's go through, teach me what those patterns are, or teach me how to understand this rhythm.
Yes. And you know, it's interesting, because when I was doing the Ultra Music Theory certification course live, I was in Washington State, and there was a group of 30 teachers. It was a 3-day live event. It's an online course now, but I have on many occasions all over North America taught it as a live event. So I taught the concept of rhythm and rest, and we have a unique way of doing that in the UMT program. And after I taught it, I said, now, who would like to volunteer to come up to the front and teach it? And of course, the teachers were kind of sitting on their hands.
Getting closer to the floor and hiding behind desks.
Yes, it was. But what was interesting is they said, you know, they were grateful for that, because to learn something and to teach it are two different things. Very different things.
Very much.
And I think you are doing such a service to your students when they get, first of all, they love to be the teacher because it's fun, but because then you really know, what do they really understand it? If you're asking them, how do you, you know, finish a cadence, and what's the cadence called? Like, just teach me. And I just say nothing. And then they're like, well, so anyway, I have a lot of fun with that. So.
Yeah. It's great. And a simple thing that I do in very beginner lessons is, once they know how to sit, or they should know how to sit properly, I go, teach me how to sit properly, and I'll slouch and lounge around and do everything wrong, and they've got to fix me up. Very simple idea, but they love it.
That's right, hilarious. But I do that too. I just lay on the piano bench and I'm really bad. So they're going, sit up straight, Miss Glory. And I go, well, okay. You know, so I try not to be too bad, but I just let them experience that, you know, teaching is not as easy as it looks. So
I agree.
So, so number two is collaboration, which is, that's a big believer in. We want to speak, we want to write, we want to read the essential universal language of music theory, of course, and have students write out a chord progression and then play it, so tactile. Students need to hear it, so auditory, and then, of course, they need to see it and make it relevant. So music theory is the whole picture of, you know, reading, writing, learning, doing it all, and have fun with it. So I think that's how we can really make it relevant. Right. And I know you do
Yeah.
the program.
Yeah, yeah. Making connections is just so important, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And making things as relevant as possible. But, you know, absolutely. Taking students' knowledge is 100% strengthened when they can go, oh, that's because this happened, or, oh, that makes sense now because I was doing this chord or whatever it was. So,
yeah.
No, that's great. I thought collaboration was going to be about working in groups because I know you're passionate about that too.
Yes. Well, and I think collaboration is, I mean, once you can experience that, I think it's important not just to have a theory lesson as just theory. You need to collaborate. And I guess even in collaboration, well, I'm kind of getting into number three because I kind of listed that one as improvisation, because to me, knowledge, which is big, is innovation and communication. So using theory concepts from, for example, a basic melody to improvise. And I think students love to improvise. Like, please let me just make something up. One of the things too that I think is really important is that when they get into just starting that improvisation, you know, everyone hates a metronome, including me. So if you even have a track that you can play with, what's interesting, as soon as you have a band that you're playing with, they don't stop. Because then you're behind. So, you know, I mean, yes, I have a metronome, but, you know,
I've been preaching that to teachers for a long time. If they can't feel a beat with a metronome, then stop using a metronome and put a beat on, because kids feel a rhythm.
Because it's way, way, way more fun. Yeah. And you know what was interesting? I'm segueing a little bit here, but I remember listening to a couple of, you know, great jazz musicians talk, and they said, why would you ever play with a metronome? Because jazz is a feel, it's a groove, it's being in the pulse. It's in my daughter Sherry says, you've got to be in the pocket, you know. So yes, you know, a metronome has a purpose and just, okay, you're really out of time here, but I think it's not, you know, my favorite cup of tea as far as necessity.
For advanced students, it's got its place.
Yeah,
and I will still use it if I've got something complex that I need to work out. But I'm with you on that one. All right. So that was number three, improvisation.
Number four.
Wait, just on that one too, because normally improvisation and music theory do not go together. So you've kind of blown this up. So as part of doing your course, a student will actually improvise in order to learn music theory. This is mind blowing.
Yes. Yeah, well, of course, right? Because if you think about it, you talked about chord progressions, you started that. So your fault. So when you're talking about that, I mean, improvising comes from you know, either one or the other, right? You can either play a melody and then improvise with the left hand, which is what my dad made me do all the time. It was not an option. Or B, and I noticed you were doing that with your student, was learning the left-hand chords and then just humming, like just even composing and improvising a little melody. Mm. And, you know, if you think of, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb, it doesn't have to go Mary had a little, you know, that. It can flow. And so, yeah, it's fun to do that.
I should mention too that Glory is talking about a video that I've created about my four-chord composing. Yeah. So I'll pop a link in our show notes to that. If you haven't seen that yet and you're wondering what she's talking about, you can actually watch me teach my approach to chords with one of my students.
Yeah, it's a great video. I love it.
Thank you. Number four.
Number four is memorization. Now, this is big. because when you develop effective analysis techniques, and that means you really need to know all the elements of music theory, it makes it so easy to memorize your pieces for performance. I remember when I was working on my ARCT for the my associate for the Royal Conservatory, my teacher's exam. I mean, there is like a lot of notes to remember. And it's not just about remembering, the pattern in the right hand or something else. But when you understand music theory and go, okay, this entire section, interestingly enough, is in the key of C major. And ooh, look at that. You know, they're modulating to the dominant. Now I'm in the key of G major. And then they're modulating to the, you know. So that to me really, really helps with memorization. And I share that with my students all the time when they're struggling. I go, okay, let's just stop. Let's think about the theory. And they go, oh, that, and you know, that's easy. I call it the KISS method. Keep it super simple. That'll do it.
Yeah, I agree. There's no doubt that having a harmonic analysis framework in your head will help with memory. Yeah, no, that's very true.
Absolutely.
All right, number five.
Number five is a standing ovation. Now, you might wonder, what the heck are you talking about? But, well, first of all, because my family is a family of entertainers, and they always strive to have the standing ovation at the end of a performance. So excellence in music performance and mastering musicianship skills are easy when you learn music theory and you really develop confident musicians. And I think as music educators, for me, that's personally my goal. I don't want to tell you how long I've been teaching, except that I have many students that are now not only teachers, but are professional entertainers and musicians. So that says, you know, we've done something right in getting them a standing ovation. And it all started with a little bit of music theory, and now they're superstars.
That's great. Well, look, as we start wrapping things up, I am keen to find out more. We've mentioned Ultimate Music Theory a number of times. So Glory has a company called Ultimate Music Theory that provides training and resources for teachers to enable them to have their students engaged in a fun and a fun and exciting and motivating experience with music theory. So just tell us a little bit about some of the things that you do offer.
Yeah, absolutely. Sheila McKibben-Uren and I created the Ultimate Music Theory program 10 years ago. We're just having our 10th birthday. Sheila and I have written over 50 books together, and we're still best friends. So that's a big sign there. 50 books is a lot. And we have workbooks and answer books. As I mentioned, we developed the Ultimate Music Theory flashcards app. We have 10 online courses, including the signature course of the certification course. And we've created many, many free resources. And one of them is the assessment exam. So if you're new to Ultimate Music Theory, you are welcome to download the free assessment exams. Maybe you're not even sure where your student should be or fit in. One of the things I'm big on is providing answer pages for everything. So every workbook, every exam book that we have written, we always do answer pages. And it's not because you don't know the answers, but it's because it's time consuming. If you looked at all the hundreds and hundreds of pages that Sheila and I had written and just handed them to you and said, go ahead, do all the answer pages, it would take you years. Like, it's just a lot of work. And I just want to be there to support the teachers. So we have a lot of fun doing that. And we've also created all the resources for music history. So if you are using the supplemental workbooks, some of you might be doing RCM, some of you might be doing ABRSM. There's a lot of state exams. So we kind of cover everything. We're just the little world of Ultimate Music Theory.
I was going to ask you about that because I'm based in Australia. So we have the AMEB here. People also use Trinity, ABRSM, there's ANSCA, there's lots of different exam boards all around the world, of course. So if a teacher uses your resources, first quick question, can a teacher use your workbooks and resources without having the training?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So that's an added benefit. If you really want more in depth, how did she put this together and how does she teach it through the course? Okay. Will it help teachers, let's say in Australia here, train students for, let's say, a grade 3 AMEB theory exam?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, music theory is music theory. I think one of the things that was interesting for me and why I created the program in the first place was that I was frustrated as a teacher with the resources that were available to me, and I didn't really feel confident. And so when you use the Ultimate Music Theory workbooks, and when I wrote them in the very beginning, I basically did this. I would have you as my student, Tim, and I would just ask you to read that out loud, and I'd say, do you know what to do? And if you said, I have no clue, I would take it back and write it again. So honestly, students can practically self-learn. I mean, of course you need a teacher, but they are written on every page. We have a write on every page technique. So there is always information, examples, and exercises. Information, examples, and exercises, so that it's easy to consume. There's a title at the top of every page that says, this is the concept that you're learning. And so, yeah, it just kind of flows and students don't even realize how smart they're getting.
That's good. And I just want to also link back to something we said right at the start, which was this is potentially, if you would like to earn some more money from the same number of hours that you're teaching, maybe offering small theory group classes could be the way to go. Yeah. So I'm interested to know, do you have any teachers in your program that you know of who just do theory teaching, for example, and maybe they don't even teach anymore? Practical.
Yes, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, it's funny that you asked that because I had, we've had obviously hundreds of teachers going through the Ultimate Music Theory Certification Program. And one of the teachers said, you know, I'm making so much money teaching theory club classes that I'm actually going to, and I'm loaded. So I'm actually going to just, as my students graduate from piano in the highest level that she taught, which I think was level 8, she actually just didn't continue taking any more students because she went to the local school and there was a band program there and they didn't teach theory in band. So here's all these musicians scrambling. And so she got band students. So, I mean, the opportunities, and again, in the certification course, we provide you with the marketing materials the knowledge and how to set up a class, what fees to charge, the policy letters, the lesson plans. I mean, we have done all the work for you. And for me, obviously, you know, it was years of development. And if I would have had that, oh my gosh, I would have been there like in a heartbeat because it's a lot of work. But it is a big opportunity. And I know I've gone through your resources, Tim. It's wonderful to see that we're open to learning new ways of communicating, you know, teach differently and do things in a different way. And that really is what is now, you know, I think the days of just going to your piano lesson and your teacher tapping on the side and, you know, things have changed. And you have to be engaged. What are you listening to on your iPod? Like, let's make sure that we're giving them variety from classical music, which I insist on in order to develop independence of hands and fingers, to, you know, using an app and just, I want well-rounded musicians. And I know that you do as well. So absolutely. In the certification course, that's really what I'm trying to help teachers do is to grow. And if they're open to being coachable, I'm there to support your learning for sure.
That's great. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that you've created a free little mini ebook for our listeners today. So can you just tell us quickly, what will people get if they download this little ebook you've created?
Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to create something special for Tim.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, what can I do? So I actually decided that I would do an ebook. I've been talking a lot about learning styles. So, and I know that you're going to provide that for them. So this is a free ebook. It is the three effective ways to teach students in their own learning style. And I'm also included in the ebook is a direct link for you to get a free online course, which is called the Teach Basic Rudiments Mini Course, which includes 12 video sessions on how to teach music theory concepts that are in each of the 12 lessons in the Basic Rudiments workbook. So it's just a little gift to say, you know, here it is. And I'm sure that you'll enjoy it. And I hope that it serves you in your teaching, so you have a little deeper understanding about the learning styles of your students.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for creating that for us, Gloria. And that will be on the show notes page. And where can people go to find out more about you and all the great things you're doing?
Sure. They can go to ultimatemusictheory.com. That's where we'll have our free resources, and you'll kind of have links to everything that you need. If you're interested in the online courses, you can go to my.ultimatemusictheory.com. And we're open to questions. We're always here for we've got a fantastic team. The Ultimate Music Theory team is here to support you. And so just send us an email or get in touch with us.
That's fantastic. Oh, and also on Facebook too, right?
Thank you. Yeah, we have a fabulous Ultimate Music Theory Facebook group, and fantastic. Every Friday, I do Ultimate Music interviews with special guests such as Tim.
And, yes, I'm in the group.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And so they're live. So whatever comes out, comes out. So anyway, I'm very grateful. Thank you again, Tim, for inviting me. It's a wonderful opportunity to share with your listeners. And I'm very excited to say that we're also available on Amazon in Australia. So you can check that out too.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us today, Glory. And have a great evening over there now, right?
Yeah, right. You're saying see you Monday. I love the email. Yeah, it was Tim sent me an email and it said, and I'll see you later from the future.
Yeah, no, it was like, because I knew it was your Thursday. I'm like, yeah, happy Friday from the future.
That's cute. Yeah, I love it.
Thank you so much, Glory. See you soon.
Thanks, bye-bye. Tim.
Well, I hope you got as inspired by that interview as I did. Glory's enthusiasm is definitely infectious, and I do encourage you to go out and check out her some of her resources, and also, of course, download your freebie from the show notes page today at timtopham.com/episode151. And a reminder, of course, that you can be listening to these episodes, if you're not already, on my app. Just search for Tim Topham in any of the app stores, download my free app, and you'll be able to access both the podcasts, my blogs, and all my social media articles and videos. Next week on the podcast, I'm interviewing Andrew Ingovit, who has created a method called the Musicolor Method. Now, Andrew's a very interesting guy. He's had quite a bit of life experience in a lot of different industries and areas, and it was fascinating unpacking some of that with him and also talking about how his method could potentially inspire and help some of your students, particularly some of your younger students. So we talk through exactly how he came to create his own method and where he's at with it all now, and also gives us a very, very special offer. So don't miss out on that. That's coming up next week with Andrew. And thank you again very much for tuning in today and for being with me this week. You could be listening to any number of music teaching podcasts now. There's probably about 8 of them, I think, by my account. So I really do appreciate that you are tuning in to me, and it really means a lot. So I look forward to seeing you again next week. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Just before you go, if you've enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams. Whether that's just about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home, or about hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more info and how to join us inside the circle, head over to timtopham.com/community today. I'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.